Greetings, it's June 13th, 2023, 18:53 hours Eastern Daylight Time, Ward Green with you. This is a song that was released in 1973. It was number 7 on the Canadian RPM Top Singles chart, and it was number 2 on the U.S. Billboard Top 100, as well as number 12 on the U.S. Billboard Easy Listening, and number 1 on the U.S. Cashbox Top 100. That's a mouthful. It was a song from the 4th studio album of the Allman Brothers, entitled Brothers and Sisters, in 1973. That was the album. The song was written and sung by guitarist Dickie Betts, and it's called Ramblin' Man. Well, what have I done again? I've made the same mistake again with my... What? I'm on, oh, chapter? Really? Oh, that's the wrong... Oh, I see, that's the wrong article. Okay, here we go. So we're... That's much closer to where we want to be. This is the Wild Road article. That was a short... And I shortened the song a little bit there because it's got a lot of instrumental and we want to conserve bandwidth. I just wanted to share that with you, what that song is like. It was inspired by a song by Hank Williams of the same name, according to Wikipedia. So there's a lot of things of interest about that song, and now my throat's going wacky on me here for no reason. There are no allergies anymore this summer, so we're now into the beginning of summer. There's no allergies. They went away a few days ago, so there's no need to run the HEPA filter or anything. I'm just trying to get down to where we are now. Here we are. We're getting close. We're on 9, maybe? Yeah, I think we're on 9. Yes, we did the interesting, very interesting chapter, paragraph, number 8, in chapter 11 of Wild Road concerning money, in particular the money of the Egyptians that was minted by Phidon in about 570 BCE that we proved very clearly and using strong references of coinage experts dates to far later than some and many, in fact, other commentators suggest. Now, in paragraph 9 of chapter 11, Wild Road, Ahead to History, according to Sir Isaac Newton, ancient historians were widely mistaken in overestimating rains by about 40%. As dates are reckoned backwards from known dates, this has caused all of their dates to be figured too early. The only reason that earlier dates have prevailed over such a long time, from the time of ancient historians for King Phidon of Argos, is a wrongly early bias for all ancient dates, based on the incorrect value of the precession of the stars, this being set at 1 degree in 100 years, 40% too many, above the 72 years now known. But the date of King Phidon of Argos has now been set in the BG, in agreement with all evidence, at 580 BCE. And of course, you know, that's the more or less the earliest date. There's 570 is another date we know that's possible. The Trojan War of 898 to 888 BCE harmonizes with Phidon. The dating of Shoshenq the First we should examine, and Newton and Crosthwaite have already agreed in identifying him in more recent times as the Sesostris of Herodotus. Meaning that, of course, we didn't know anything about Shoshenq until archaeology started to turn things up in Egypt, which was later in time. Now, Newton, interestingly, did refer to this king also. But Newton was in the 1700s as far as his work went. So, I mean, but whereas Charles Crosthwaite was in the 1800s. So it's more recent than many of the more ancient historians, is what the point is. So, for example, the Parian Marble was very ancient, back in the BCE years, for that document, and it says 895 for Phidon, which is way too early. As the Sesostris of Herodotus, is Shoshenq the First identified? So Shoshenq the First is, by Newton and Crosthwaite, identified as the Sesostris of Herodotus. We all believe that the Sesostris of Herodotus has the sense of the king known nowadays as Shoshenq the First, who is in the Bible known as Shishak. I shouldn't say we all believe, maybe most of us. We all, virtually all of us, believe that the Sesostris of Herodotus is the king known nowadays as Shoshenq. And in the Bible, he's known as Shishak, the invader of Judah in year 5 of King Rehoboam. Invader of Judah in year 5 of King Rehoboam, and who may be so identified. This does not rule out earlier kings having this same name, as far as whom we identify Sesostris as. That's what that's saying. There were kings called Sesostris, and so when Herodotus writes about Sesostris, we're not sure necessarily which one of them he's referring to, in fact. However, for the sake of discussion or revelation, the king called Sesostris by Herodotus is called Shishak by Josephus, when he corrects Herodotus on the name. So Josephus, and he lived in the first century, you know, 1900 years ago. And he's the one who knew about Herodotus, who wrote in 400 BC or something around that time. And he knew about the Bible and the king Shishak in the Bible. So, but he corrected Herodotus, so he believed that Sesostris was Shishak. And he corrected him on the name. Sir Isaac Newton's exposition of the name of Sesostris, he gives in italics, Chronology of Ancient Kingdoms, the name of his book. And he convincingly gives Sesostris the form Shishank, without any knowledge that Shoshank I is today equally called Shishank after some centuries of archaeology. There was no archaeology in Egypt at the time of Newton that would have identified Shoshank. So Newton was convincingly doing this before the name was even discovered. And today, Shoshank is also called Shishank by Egyptian archaeologists. I mean, by purveyors of Egyptian archaeology, that is. So Shoshank and Shishank are the same person, according to the experts nowadays. But Newton didn't even know about Shoshank, and yet he identified this name Shishak, or Sesostris, as Shishank. That's how he translated it, or that's how he transcribed it. So Newton had the foresight to call him by the name of the Egyptian king, by which he's called today by the experts. But he was identifying Sesostris as that king, merely without any evidence other than linguistic evidence. So that's quite remarkable, of course. That seems to be solid proof that Shishak is Shoshank, or at least that the Sesostris of Herodotus was Shoshank, very convincingly. Shoshank and Shishank are the same name, according to the Egyptian linguists, okay? So, that's the explanation. I mean, I'm not in a position to have all the facts right now at my disposal, because I'm not doing this research currently. At the time I wrote this article, I could have done this with far more information, but it would have taken too long also. I don't have all the facts, though, at my disposal quite as fully and easily on the tip of my tongue as I did at the time when I wrote these articles. This is from 2016, so I can reread the article, I can look things up a little bit, but I'm not doing this research currently, just so you know. But I did do the research, and I mean, there's a lot of, let's be clear, there is a lot of controversy about whether Shishak himself is the same person as Shoshank. And there are reasons for that, and I just read about it today, actually. There are reasons because the ancient billboards, as you might think of them, or big inscriptions that were done by the Egyptian pharaohs, in particular the ones done by Shoshank the First, didn't include Jerusalem on the list of the cities that were conquered. And there are many ways that other experts have explained why that might have been so, and yet still that Shoshank could have been easily the same person as Shishak. One theory even says that Shoshank used an old list of conquests by earlier pharaohs and just repeated it and didn't even use his own list, and inscribed all of the names of the cities according to the earlier list. So There are many ways, though, to explain why Jerusalem wasn't on the list. Another one being that Rehoboam didn't... Jerusalem wasn't destroyed, was it? It wasn't conquered. The kingship continued. So they didn't really conquer Jerusalem at all. So there's no... You know, we know that. Rehoboam had a successor and everything went on. Albeit with a divided kingdom at that point. But that was irrelevant to what the Egyptians did, apart from the fact that the dispute may have arisen somewhat because of this. No, it actually arose before. The dispute arose before Shishak came in the year 5 of Rehoboam, actually. So, but I haven't even, I mean, to do all of the research every day is impossible. But there is no connection between the splitting of the kingdom and Shishak. It happened first, before. If I recall correctly, it happened when Rehoboam first became king, which is 5 years earlier than this attack by Shishak. So Shishak, the name is similar to Shoshank. Shishak, Shishank, Shishak, it's the same name. It sounds like it's the same name. So, and they lived at the same time, exactly. I mean, the correspondence between the reign of Shoshank the first and the reign of Rehoboam is... They overlap. Their reigns overlap massively. So there's no real problem with the identification in the eyes of many experts. So we don't need to be too concerned. That's it for that study for today. Now, our proverb for today, little children. Proverbs 25, verse 4. Let there be a removing of scummy dross from the silver, and all of it will come forth refined. Now our reading of Leviticus is a very long one. Leviticus chapter 13. And Jehovah proceeded to speak to Moses and Aaron, saying, in case a man develops in the skin of his flesh an eruption or a scab or a blotch, and it does develop in the skin of his flesh into the plague of leprosy, he must then be brought to Aaron the priest or to one of his sons, the priests. I just realized the EQ is on. And the priest must look at the plague in the skin of the flesh, and when the hair in the plague has turned white, and the appearance of the plague is deeper than the skin of his flesh, it is the plague of leprosy. And the priest must look at it, and he must declare him unclean. But if the blotch is white in the skin of his flesh, and its appearance is not deeper than the skin, and its hair has not turned white, the priest must then quarantine the plague 7 days. And the priest must look at him on the seventh day, and if in the way it looks the plague has stopped, the plague has not spread in the skin, the priest must also quarantine him another 7 days. And the priest must look at him on the seventh day the second time, and if the plague has grown dull and the plague has not spread in the skin, the priest must also pronounce him clean. It was a scab, and he must wash his garments and be clean. But if the scab has unquestionably spread in the skin after his appearing before the priest for the establishment of his purification, he must then appear the second time before the priest, and the priest must take a look. And if the scab has spread in the skin, the priest must then declare him unclean. It is leprosy. In case the plague of leprosy develops in a man, he must then be brought to the priest, and the priest must take a look. And if there is a white eruption in the skin, and it has turned the hair white, and the raw of the living flesh is in the eruption, it is chronic leprosy in the skin of his flesh, and the priest must declare him unclean. He should not quarantine him, for he is unclean. Now if the leprosy unquestionably breaks out in the skin, and the leprosy does cover all the skin of the one with the plague from his head to his feet, to the full sight of the priest's eyes, and the priest has looked, and there the leprosy has covered all his flesh, he must then pronounce the plague unclean. It sounds like he would pronounce it unclean if it covered all his flesh. But no, he must then pronounce the plague clean. All of it has turned white. He is clean. But on the day the living flesh appears in it, he will be unclean. And the priest must see the living flesh, and he must declare him unclean. The living flesh is unclean. It is leprosy. Or in case the living flesh goes back and it does change to white, he must then come to the priest, and the priest must look at him. And if the plague has been changed to white, the priest must then pronounce the plague clean. He is clean. As for the flesh, In other words, when it's not white, it's active. The plague is active in the flesh. As for the flesh, in case a boil develops in its skin, and it does get healed, and in the place of the boil, a white eruption has developed, or a reddish white blotch, he must then show himself to the priest, and the priest must look, and if its appearance is lower than the skin and its hair has turned white, the priest must then declare him unclean. If the hair is white, it is the plague of leprosy. It has broken out in the boil. But if the priest looks at it, and there now there is no white hair in it, and it is not deeper than the skin, and it is dull, the priest must then quarantine him 7 days, and if it unmistakably spreads in the skin, the priest must then declare him unclean. It is a plague. But if in its place the blotch should stand, it has not spread, it is the inflammation of the boil, and the priest must pronounce him clean. Or in case there comes to be a scar in the skin of the flesh from the fire, and the raw flesh of the scar does become a reddish-white blotch or a white one, the priest must then look at it, and if the hair has been changed white in the blotch and its appearance is deeper than the skin, it is leprosy. It is broken out in the scar, and the priest must declare him unclean. It is the plague of leprosy. But if the priest looks at it, and there now there is no white hair in the blotch, and it is not lower than the skin, and it is dull, the priest must then quarantine him 7 days, and the priest must look at him on the 7th day. If it unmistakably spreads in the skin, the priest must then declare him unclean. It is the plague of leprosy. But if the blotch stands in its place, it has not spread in the skin, and it is dull, it is an eruption of the scar, and the priest must pronounce him clean, because it is an inflammation of the scar. As for a man or a woman, in case a plague develops in such one on the head or on the chin, the priest must then see the plague, and if its appearance is deeper than the skin and the hair is yellow and scarce in it, the priest must then declare such one unclean. It is an abnormal falling off of hair. It is leprosy of the head or of the chin. But in case the priest sees the plague of abnormal falling off of hair, and look, its appearance is not deeper than the skin, and there is no black hair in it, the priest must then quarantine the plague of abnormal falling off of hair 7 days, and the priest must look at the plague on the 7th day, and if the abnormal falling off of hair has not spread, and no yellow hair has developed in it, and the appearance of the abnormal falling off of hair is not deeper than the skin, he must then have himself shaved, but he will not have the abnormal falling off of hair shaved, and the priest must quarantine the abnormal falling off of hair 7 days again. And the priest must look at the abnormal falling off of hair on the 7th day, and if the abnormal falling off of hair has not spread in the skin, and its appearance is not deeper than the skin, the priest must then pronounce him clean, and he must wash his garments and be clean. But if the abnormal falling off of hair unmistakably spreads in the skin after the establishment of his purification, the priest must then see him, and if the abnormal falling off of hair has spread in the skin, the priest need not make examination for yellow hair. He is unclean. But if, in its look, the abnormal falling off of hair has stood, and black hair has grown in it, the abnormal falling off of hair has been healed. He is clean, and the priest must pronounce him clean. As for a man or a woman, in case blotches develop in the skin of their flesh, white blotches, the priest must then take a look, and if the blotches in the skin of their flesh are dull white, it is a harmless eruption. It has broken out in the skin. He is clean. As for a man, in case his head grows bald, it is baldness. He is clean. And if his head grows bald up front, it is forehead baldness. He is clean. But in case a reddish-white plague develops in the baldness of the crown or of the forehead, it is leprosy breaking out in the baldness of his crown or of his forehead, and the priest must look at him. And if there is an eruption of the reddish-white plague in the baldness of his crown or of his forehead, like the appearance of leprosy in the skin of the flesh, he is a leper. He is unclean. Unclean is what the priest should declare him. His plague is on his head. As for the leprous one in whom the plague is, his garments should be torn, and his head should become ungroomed, and he should cover over the mustache and call out, "Unclean, unclean!" All the days that the plague is in him, he will be unclean. He is unclean. He should dwell isolated. Outside the camp is his dwelling place. As for a garment, in case the place of, as for a garment, in case the plague of leprosy develops in it, whether in a woolen garment or in a linen garment or in the warp or in the woof of the linen or of the wool, or in a skin or in anything made of skin, and the yellowish green or reddish plague does develop in the garment or in the skin or in the warp or in the woof or in any article of skin, it is the plague of leprosy, and it must be shown to the priest, and the priest must see the plague, and he must quarantine the plague 7 days. When he has seen the plague on the 7th day, that the plague has spread in the garment or in the warp or in the woof or in the skin, for any use for which the skin may be made, the plague is malignant leprosy. It is unclean, and he must burn the garment or the warp or the woof in the wool or in the linen or any article of skin in which the plague may develop, because it is malignant leprosy. It should be burned in the fire. But if the priest takes a look, and there now, the plague has not spread in the garment or in the warp or in the woof or in any article of skin, the priest must also command that they should wash that in which the plague is, and he must quarantine it a second 7 days, and the priest must look at the plague after it has been washed out. And if the plague has not changed its look, and yet the plague has not spread, it is unclean. You should burn it in the fire. It is a low spot in a threadbare patch on either its underside or its outside. But if the priest has taken a look, and there now, the plague is dull after it has been washed out, he must then tear it out of the garment or the skin or the warp or the woof. However, if it still appears in the garment or in the warp or in the woof or in any article of skin, it is breaking out. You should burn in the fire whatever it is in which the plague is. As for the garment or the warp or the woof or any article of skin that you may wash, when the plague has disappeared from them, it must then be washed a second time, and it must be clean. This is the law of the plague of leprosy in a garment of wool or of linen or in the warp or in the woof or in any article of skin, in order to pronounce it clean or to declare it unclean. And that is the end of Leviticus chapter 13. I told you it was long. And now, from Mark, we have chapter 13. As he was going out of the temple, one of Jesus' disciples said to him, "Teacher, see what sort of stones and what sort of buildings." However, Jesus said to him, "Do you behold these great buildings? By no means will a stone be left here upon a stone and not be thrown down." And as he was sitting on the Mount of Olives with the temple in view, Peter and James and John and Andrew began to ask him privately, "Tell us, when will these things be? And what will be the sign when all these things are destined to come to a conclusion?" So Jesus started to say to them, "Look out that nobody misleads you. Many will come on the basis of my name, saying, 'I am he,' and will mislead many. Moreover, when you hear of wars and reports of wars, do not be terrified. These things must take place, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in one place after another. There will be food shortages. These are a beginning of pangs of distress. As for you, look out for yourselves. People will deliver you up to local courts, and you will be beaten in synagogues and be put on the stand before governors and kings for my sake, for a witness to them. Also, in all the nations, the good news has to be preached first. But when they are leading you along to deliver you up, do not be anxious beforehand about what to speak, but whatever is given you in that hour, speak this, for you are not the one speaking, but the Holy Spirit is. Furthermore, brother will deliver brother over to death, and a father a child, and children will rise up against parents and have them put to death. and you will be objects of hatred by all people on account of my name. But he that has endured to the end is the one that will be saved. However, when you catch sight of the disgusting thing that causes desolation, standing where it ought not, let the reader use discernment. Then let those in Judea begin fleeing to the mountains. Let the man on the housetop not come down, nor go inside to take anything out of his house. And let the man in the field not return to the things behind to pick up his outer garment. Woe to the pregnant women and those suckling a baby in those days. Keep praying that it may not occur in winter time, for those days will be days of a tribulation, such as has not occurred from the beginning of the creation which God created until that time, and will not occur again. In fact, unless Jehovah had cut short the days, no flesh would be saved. But on account of the chosen ones whom he has chosen, he has cut short the days. Then too, if anyone says to you, "See, here is the Christ. See, there he is," do not believe it, for false Christs and false prophets will arise and will give signs and wonders to lead astray, if possible, the chosen ones. You then watch out. I have told you all things beforehand. But in those days, after that tribulation, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will be falling out of heaven, and the powers that are in the heavens will be shaken, and then they will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory. And then he will send forth the angels and will gather his chosen ones together from the four winds, from earth's extremity to heaven's extremity. Now from the fig tree, learn the illustration. Just as soon as its young branch grows tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. Likewise, also you, when you see these things happening, know that he is near at the doors. Truly I say to you that this generation will by no means pass away until all things happen. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. Concerning that day or the hour, nobody knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, but the Father. Keep looking, keep awake, for you do not know when the appointed time is. It is like a man traveling abroad that left his house and gave the authority to his slaves, to each one his work, and commanded the doorkeeper to keep on the watch. Therefore keep on the watch, for you do not know when the master of the house is coming, whether late in the day, or at midnight, or at cock crowing, or early in the morning, in order that when he arrives suddenly, he does not find you sleeping. But what I say to you, I say to all, keep on the watch. And that is the end of Mark chapter 13. Little children, I hope you enjoyed that. Thank you for listening and watching. It's a wonderful time in which we do live today. There are many interesting things going on in the world as we speak, and we're to keep on the watch. So blessed we are if we do that. And it is June 13th, 2023, 1926 hours Eastern Daylight Time, Ward Green. And on my behalf, it's Sissy and Ellie saying bye for now.